Hey guys, my guest tonight, demonologist Nathaniel J. Gillis, is going to be talking about the work he does and other spiritual things. We'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks, find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Good afternoon, everybody. How's everybody doing? My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner, my creaky chair, of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team, based out of Sacramento, California. We are 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you have a paranormal problem, we can get to you. May take us a couple days because California is a really big state, but we will get to you. In the case that we can't get to you, we do have mediums on staff who can contact you and talk to you about what may or may not be going on. And if something, I'm just pushing my buttons and talking to you guys. Okay. And if something turns out to be paranormal or they feel it's something paranormal, they can usually settle down the energy until we can get out there. And it never takes us more than 1 or 2 days. Because like I said, we've got people up and down the state. Anyway, that being said, if you want to find us, just Google us at California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team. You can find us on all the social media places. We'll just pop right on up. Okay, speaking of social media, here we go. If you're watching from Facebook tonight, and a lot of you are, and you see and like what you, you like and hear, I don't know what to say, see and hear, and like what you see tonight, be sure to follow. You know, we're always looking for followers, and be sure, you know, especially, and this goes all the way across the board, be sure to leave us a thumbs up or a happy face. Show us some love, okay? That goes all the way across the boards from Facebook, all the way through Twitch, all the way through Twitter, all the way through, you know, YouTube and all those other places. We all works the same way. And be sure to comment amongst yourselves, because I do read the comments, but be sure to comment in the chat room as well. If you're watching from YouTube or you want to watch from YouTube, that address is youtube.com/@California Haunts Radio. And if you go over there, it's kind of interesting because I've got all of our videos over there, and it's more than 950 videos, all of this show. All different topics. I'm a journalist, photojournalist. I like to change it up. So I'm not always going to be focusing on the paranormal. I've got other stuff as well. So check it out, you know. And then what I did was, because there's so many shows over there, it gets confusing, even for me. I get over there and my eyes bulge and my head goes like this, you know. So what I did was I started to put everything into separate folders by category. And I'm still in the process of doing that. I mean, it's almost 1,000 videos. But you can look. If you like cryptids, you can check out the cryptids videos. If you are into demonology, you can check the demonology videos. If you're into Nancy Matz, you can check her videos out as well. What you have to do is just one click away to find that stuff. And it makes it a lot easier, trust me. Okay, so all the niceties are done with that. Help us out. Again, you know, like if you're on TikTok too, double tap the screen, all that stuff. Just show us some love if you like what you see tonight. My guest tonight is a demonologist, Nathaniel J. Gillis. I have a lot of respect for demonologists. I grew up Catholic, so you know, I was raised with the fact that ghosts are negative entities and this that and the thing, and you know, when I became a ghost hunter, it was it was hard for me because we would go to like church meetings, my mother and I and stuff, and they would ask me what I did, and then I'd have to tell them a journalist. You know, I couldn't tell them I was a ghost hunter because at that time it was looked down upon. But the funny thing about that is that, and I know this from working with some of my teams up in Washington and Oregon, you know, we're the first line of defense for a lot of these cases. And we go out, and especially where the Catholic Church is concerned, we have to take all the notes and get all the stuff written up. So we are, as ghost hunters, we are the first line of defense before the Catholic Church goes out. So it's kind of like a love-hate relationship with this. But this gentleman I have on today, he is a demonologist, and he does go out. See, when people call, he does go out. So let's talk with him. Let's get to know him a little bit and see how he does things. Here we go.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's great to be on with you.
I'm excited to talk to you. I really am. Tell me a little bit about you.
Well, I am from Ohio originally, and my very first encounter with this phenomenon occurred when I was 8 years old as my parents moved into a new house, and whatever that being was manifested as other entities. And before I knew it, I was a part of a full-blown malevolent haunting. And so since then, I have been pouring myself into the research, coming to some conclusions that were alarming just because of my personal worldview before I got into this field. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, that's how I got into this. And so that's what I am interested in as of today.
Interesting. Yeah, I think like I had a similar background in a way because I was seeing stuff, you know, when I was little. Mm-hmm. And this house has been active since I was little. I've been here 40-something years, and it's still active, you know. I can feel people looking over. Even now, I can feel them looking over my shoulder. There's people watching us do this. And so, it you know, I can tell when, if I go on a ghost hunt or I bring something home with me that doesn't belong here, because mm-hmm. the ones that are here act a certain way. So I can tell they're different. And my neighbors think it's hilarious because they know what I do, and I open up all the windows and doors, and I yell to get them out of my house. You know, and the neighbors go, oh, you brought another one home, huh? You know, so it's like the running joke in the neighborhood. But I did that, too. I grew up watching, you know, like those shows In Search Of and everything, then I started pouring into research and doing a lot of research on this stuff before I even stepped foot to do any kind of investigating.
Mm-hmm. I think I think we're all alike, you know. I mean, everybody has their own origin stories, but at the end of the day, we're all striving to contribute to the mystery and majesty of the phenomenon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, it's one thing to do the research, you know, and look into this stuff. It's another thing mm-hmm. to become a demonologist. What led you to that point?
I think that was kind of built into me as a child. I mean, when I was suffering from that malevolent haunting, I was attending a local church, and I was kind of bringing my case study and my experiences to them. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because some of the manifestations, rather, in that home did not fit the blueprint of the common demonic entity. And that's when I started to realize that there's something beyond the veil that is mimicking and masquerading as various entities. And so that has been kind of instrumental within my own worldview now. A lot of things have changed. The way I perceive this intelligence has evolved. And mm-hmm. so as I sit here tonight and talking to you on your wonderful show, I believe that whatever we're dealing with has been a life form present here since the dawn of recorded history, mm-hmm. and that even motifs of the demonic hypothesis have been authored by this phenomenon as an effort to hide from us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's understandable.
Yeah. And so by the time researchers get done with a, you know, a whole life full of academic pursuits, only then do they barely begin to scratch the surface and ask the questions we're asking now. Why is it masquerading as mm-hmm. various beings? And at the end of the day, what does it want from us?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it trying to do that? I mean, because it wants us to accept that. I mean, that's the whole thing with all this. Once we accept it, it's going to come at us. You know, it'll start that possession thing going on. And is that why it's masquerading? Because it wants to show up as your grandma, it wants to show up as a little kid or whatever it shows up at, so we invite it in.
Yeah, so the deception is pervasive. It's interreligious and cross-cultural. And it seems to me that this phenomenon has a learning matrix built into it, mm-hmm. to where as we evolve as a species, it co-evolves alongside of us, mm-hmm. and that there are certain archetypes that it can author within our consciousness and then on the exterior dimension then manifest as that archetype. And we think, okay, that must be right. And so we step into confirmation bias. Mm-hmm. And so this co-evolution between us and it is something that I'm deeply interested in, because I'm coming to the point now where it's almost like it's evolving in order to evade, where it's two or three steps ahead of us, because it realizes that if it ever stops long enough and we make eye contact with it, we as a species have the ability to start picking apart the mask it wears, and it does not want us to see.
Now, when you talk about it, this thing being an it, I mean, like I said, I grew up Catholic, so of course it's the Catholic Church. All these spirits are satanic in general. So when you talk about it being it, are you talking about something satanic, or are you talking about something completely different that's evolved?
Well, the Hasatan lore, again, I mean, if we're looking back in biblical antiquity, that there was Satan, and then there was a species of Hasatan, which were simply the working term for adversary. But whatever we're dealing with, it appears to have some form of alien magic to it. And some of the incantations we have inherited from this intelligence, it's eclipsing. I mean, I have evidence even now in my case studies where the ritual amulets and the sigils that it's carving into people's skin, it's transcending what we know. And so even the itty-bitty pieces of the phenomenon we're collecting throughout sorcery, esotericism, it's almost like it's being hand-fed to us to get us in one direction, not realizing that there is an intelligence here that's transcending all of it.
You just mentioned alien. Tell me about that a little bit.
Well, in times past, when the phenomenon would manifest as in the image, it would actually employ a cognitive interface that was usually familiar with the experiencer. So I've had cases where it manifests as a deceased ancestor, a demon, a ghost, and there were certain times where the experiencer could actually vet it and actually compare that ancestor to the historical record. Because in these case studies, if the phenomenon is trying to lead that individual astray or to get them involved in something they would have never been involved with prior to, they would wear that mask up until they would do something that did not fit the blueprint and the historical record of that person. And so some of these cases involved experiencers who saw beyond that. In like one particular case study I have where an individual grew out of the mask the phenomenon was wearing. She went from a little girl to a young adult, and the phenomenon forgot. It did not co-evolve. And so what we see now, and we go through kind of the bloody footprints in the snow, we see, okay, yeah, it's horns and hooves. And then we see, okay, yeah, it's interdimensional. And all of a sudden, okay, now we have an entity where it's almost like the phenomenon authored a new character in the game, one that cannot possibly be vetted outside of phenomenon. And now within ufology, we have experiencers that are not introducing new doctrine or anything remotely novice. They're just introducing something from an extraterrestrial origin. And so now what's occurring is, whereas in times past, we'd say, okay, well, you're Dear and Edna, you would say A, B, and C. We're going to compare it to what Dear and Edna believed and taught.
Right, right.
Now what it's doing is it's verifying and validating the truthfulness of its message based upon how many are there witnessing its manifestation, which is antithetical to everything we know. And in a lot of people, specifically within ufology, get enchanted by the miracle, not realizing that you don't test the message by virtue of the miracle. You test the message by testing the message.
Is that why there's reports of these alien beings using like holograms in front of themselves of people that that are deceased?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I had a case like that too, where the experiencer was abducted and this individual was thinking, they're interfacing with the gray. And then when it turned sideways, it was almost like, like you said, a hologram. There was some kind of mask it was employing. But to go even deeper, even some of the rituals used to contact this phenomenon, I always go back to the skull experiment in England, wherein you had parapsychologists who were trying to connect with others within the afterlife. And in doing so, at the very end of the experiment, they took a tripod, pressed record on the camera and left the room. The next morning, their camera picked up an alien gray staring into the lens.
Wow.
So the question is, first of all, let me back up. There's no question. What I'm saying and others that I've been working with a while back, and I mean recently now, is that should not be taking place.
Right.
If these are separate entities, separate life forms, that should not be taking place. And more than that, any rational person, if I were to give you a phone, and I say a phone number rather, and I'd say, okay, you know, this is a number that you can call anytime, you can contact any of your ancestors. And then you thinking, okay, great, you dial that number and an extraterrestrial picks the phone up. Mm-hmm. Right? We would kind of think, wait a minute. First of all, was that ever my ancestor? Number two, or was this a con? Well, was I being manipulated by an entity, a life form, in order to get myself into its presence to where it starts playing by rules I didn't know even existed? And so this is where the compartmentalization of this intelligence is so important, because there is also evidence to suggest that some of the guides that it has kind of, well, you know, masqueraded as, right. It's also kind of an initiatory practice to where once we believe that is them, then it leads us into the presence of the proto-intelligence, which seems to be whatever the alien grays are, which we'll get to that in a second, too.
It makes sense to me. I mean, you know, I've been saying this before on different shows that I do. When I read the Mojave incident and what happened afterwards is what made me start to think about, you know, the fact, this paranormal investigating that I do. Because when she talked, when the gal was talking about these things reappearing in their house, the temperature would go down, like in a typical, you know, typical ghost haunting. Right. They would come out of the walls. And it was a lot like it was mirroring, you know, a ghost. And so that made me wonder if, you know, if we weren't like just hunting ghosts, if we actually were hunting aliens. Because when you think about these EVPs, a lot of them sound like they're really far off. A lot of them sound like weird, well, we say weird voices, and some sound like they're underwater even. So what if they're coming from different dimensions with these aliens?
Well, yeah, so this is where I would refer to Steve Maron, Barry Fitzgerald's research. They had multiple experiments they ran. One was called Project Doorway, but Steve Maron is an audio engineer, and he and Steve and Barry Fitzgerald deduced that some of these voices that are coming through, they want to appear as human. They want to sound as human, but when you put them under the microscope, the audio microscope, if you will, they're not. And so again, we're stepping into an arena, or more importantly, more correctly, a room full of mirrors, wondering who's the true intelligence here. And even the extraterrestrial hypothesis is something that we need to pay close attention to. Because again, if it's acted as guides, it's acted as ancestors, acted as ghosts and demons and all that, and sometimes that has not been accurate, then what's to say they're telling the truth now about their origin?
Right.
And this is important to me and others, because when you look at the landscape here, they're apparently originating from the two spaces within our reality we know the least about. Strange. Why is that the case? And so I'm leaning towards the fact that that's not an accident, that is a tailored story designed to kind of place us in the position of groping in the darkness and placing all of our trust into an unverifiable message.
And it makes sense, because with the powers that, well, I'm not saying the public, the technology that these aliens have, they can mirror just about anything that we've studied as being paranormal. They can mirror can mirror that really easily. And so it does make a lot of sense to me.
Yes. And the access they have to our reality disturbs me. I mean, we're not talking about beings that can just walk through a wall. We're talking about beings that can walk through a wall and then abduct the consciousness of an individual out to where they trigger by location. And not just by location within the experiencer's perception where, okay, I'm out of my body looking down at it, but by location witnessed by multiple other people. And so if the phenomenon can split people into two, just that little tidbit of information, if believed, then now we have to start expanding not just what we believe in, but what is this? Do we even have a vocabulary to quantify whatever they are? And so this is when I kind of get into the research of, not research, just but Ray Fowler and the experiencers of Betty and Bob Luka, where these individuals were not pulled out of their bodies, but there was almost a feeling, and we've heard this from Bob Lazar, we've heard this from John Lear as well, where they perceive us as containers, in a sense. And not just for our souls, where even one of Dr. Carla Turner's abductees was told in no uncertain terms, mm-hmm. the soul itself is a different species in the body it is inhabiting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, that would be called possession.
Right.
So it's right. kind of blending together in such a way that if any researcher, this is just from my perspective,
sure. Sure.
If any researcher is going to approach this subject with any clarity, not just having the right answers, but asking the right questions, then they're going to have a root system within the paranormal, not just into antiquity, but in modernity. Right. Because only then can we structure our senses in such a way that it begins to approach this intelligence.
Now, as a demonologist, how do you approach a situation where somebody might have a possession going on, and you have these thoughts going on as well, maybe it's something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you approach all that?
Well, I haven't done cleansings in like 3 or 4 years because
okay.
I did a case where a murder took place, and it was a possession case where a young girl, a 13-year-old girl, they were both minors, was befriended by a 15-year-old girl in school. Both of them planned to murder the family. It was the 13-year-old girl's family. But and when the 15-year-old girl came in the house, she had stub-nosed scissors. I don't want to get you canceled whatever.
Right.
But stub-nosed scissors in one hand and a knife in the other. And the husband told me a male guttural voice was coming out of her.
Wow.
And so I was there just after they had cut up the carpet. They were still doing the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there to kind of console the family and get them through the grieving process. But even then, what I encountered kind of shook my worldview, because some of the teachings I grew up hearing was like, okay, well, they can't kill you. And it's like, well, if they can commandeer the consciousness of a person, they absolutely mm-hmm. can.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And even more so, it was almost like this intelligence, this being, entity, was so intelligent to where it realized that the 15-year-old did not have access to the house. The 13-year-old did. But he could not put the knife in the hand of the 13-year-old because it went against her moral conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is weird because we know through paranormal activity, we've seen doors open.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of almost implying that there are at least rules, or there is a measure of consent that has to be given to where, yeah, I can open my own door. But in this particular case, I can't. I need somebody to assist me in what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that cleansing was interesting because at the very end of it, it was almost like somebody turned the lights on. You could actually see, it was almost like shadow figures running away on the walls. It's very interesting.
Wow, 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 wow.
But,
now let me ask, okay, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm done with that. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know what, over the years, because, you know, TV shows have pushed this possession, this satanic thing to the max, you know, and you're always getting calls from your clients, hey, I know it's demonic, you know, come out and cleanse the house, do this. I mean, as ghost hunter and paranormal investigators, we have to adapt. You know, I have a 102-question
right.
questionnaire that I ask people, and I have had to add questions involving dark forces on there to try and weed out, you know, what's going on.
Right.
In the case
right.
of what you're talking about with these aliens being, you know, whatever these things are, being one step ahead of us, two steps ahead of us, how do you adapt to that? I mean, you're forever, you know, trying to ask
yeah.
questions, you're forever trying to do stuff.
Well, I made a decision because some of the work I was doing was encountering something that I realized it's bigger than me. And I didn't have a box to put it in.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I stopped doing cleansings, I stopped. First of all, the reason I stopped doing them was because I didn't want to ever do them again. It was because I wanted to focus more on academia,
mm-hmm.
you know, the history of the phenomenon before I went back in trying to confront it. And in doing that, I started researching demonology from the ancient Near East perspective, and I realized that, okay, so that possession itself was not just the relocation of consciousness. It was the replication of life. It was how some of these beings have self-replicated their species. And I found cases, not just in antiquity, even modernity, where possession actually led to pregnancy. Possession led to the hybridization program we know within ufology today. To where, you know, the dream demon was attacking individuals in their sleep. And they're waking up the next day, possessed by consciousness and impregnated with the baby, a baby. And so that's when I started realizing that it's quite possible that by virtue of false doctrine, now we're getting theology, by virtue of false doctrine, which is that? It's a story that's antithetical to the actual teaching and actually what occurred. By virtue of false doctrine, it can absolutely masquerade itself to where we apply wrong terms to a true phenomenon. And in a sense, we are again in a gloomy labyrinth of deception. Why? And that's what I'm pursuing now. I don't mean to ramble, but it's...
No. Because while you were talking about that, I had done a case. My team had done a case out here in Sacramento where the woman lived with her daughter who was autistic. And they were seeing stuff in the house. But the kicker part of it all was that when she would go to bed at night, this woman, she would have dreams about whatever actor she saw on TV before falling to sleep.
There we go.
And she would wake up feeling violated.
Absolutely.
Now, of course, knowing what we knew back then, because that was like 6-7 years ago, you know, it's a ghost, it's coming in here to, you know, to fool you and all this. But, I mean, hearing you say what you're saying, it all falls into place. It makes a lot more sense.
Oh, yeah. I had a text written in an exorcist manual from Baghdad, Iraq, thousands of years ago. It's actually from a ritual bull, but anyways. And in this, it talks about in the event that a woman comes forward being attacked by an entity. Have you been attacked and haunted by an entity that looks like your husband or a lover, right? Or a deceased individual? And so it goes to tell you that the modus operandi of this phenomenon has never changed. And as a matter of fact, the only thing, if anything, that has changed is the propaganda it's fed the masses. Number one, it's not a modern phenomenon. It's a modern mask. It's a modern incarnation. But the bloody footprints that we are just now tracking back into antiquity, they're there. And what I've been trying to bring to the table in the field is, you know, if you get incubi experiencers, and let's go out to eat, let's have a talk. And then you get them together with UFO experiencers, and they start having a conversation, you'll realize that the symbols are all matching. And this is even more important, perhaps, that the scatology. Now, scatology is the study of excretions and secretions taken by the phenomenon. The scatology of antiquity is matching the scatology of modernity. And excretions, right? Seed. Ova, all of it. And one of the things that I brought out at the Awakening Conference in February, it was a lecture in England, was that if the scatology is the same in both demonology and ufology, then it's incumbent upon us as researchers to go back and say, okay, what were they using these secretions and excretions for in antiquity? And wouldn't you know it, that early demonologists, not just Bernard of Gordon, not just, matter of fact, a little bit later you had, not Morgan Kaplan, that's Father Sinistro of Amino, and then Montague Summers. What they realized was that there were certain rituals within sorcery that actually demanded the very same, I'm getting passionate now, same secretions harvested by the phenomenon. What? Yes. And so it appeared to me that, wait a minute, it's not just esotericism, it's not just sorcery, it's not just the occult, but that the phenomenon was actually coordinated with practitioners in order to get them to fulfill certain rituals. Now that makes perfect sense.
Right. Absolutely. And then, like you said earlier, they've done, you know, they've been coming here for years. They have this stuff down to the science now. You know, they know exactly what to do.
Oh, yeah.
And then they can improvise on it. It's like anybody else that has a job. You get really good at your job, and it's just like second nature to you. And that's what it is to these entities or whatever they are. And so they're able to make adjustments, too. You know, if we advance into something and we start getting a little smarter, they're going to move that, you know, they're going to move that goal up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so this symbiotic relationship between us and them is self-evident. Matter of fact, some of the ancient authors had a theory, and that was that some of the archetypes that the phenomenon was stepping into was actually authored within the consciousness of our species. Mm-hmm. To where when it does manifest, we're thinking, oh my God, what I thought and what came to me was actually right. And they're saying, no, I mean, one author was David, and people can say, okay, it's too religious, that's fine. But he was describing the nature of, I guess you could call it idolatry, and whatever these beings were at the time. And it was talking about how that men would go to an artificer of metal. But he begins the scripture that, and the man molded the idol.
Right.
And yet in Hebrew, you can read that both ways, as a man, but also as the idol molded the man. And so the concept they had was that there's an archetype within the brain, within the mind, and then we go out and create it, and then something else steps into it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Important, right?
Right, right.
Sorry, you let me talk. It's all right.
No, it's fine. Look, my guest last night was saying about the human brain is that, you know, the belief that she's got is that our brain will create stuff to make us more relaxed. You know, when we're faced with something terrifying.
Right.
And again, what you're saying fits with that. Because when these things come in, your brain's automatically going to try and rectify whatever it's seeing to make it better for you to deal with it. Yeah.
Correct. And so this idea that it's not just... Well, actually, let me go back and say this and kind of build this case, if I can.
Okay.
So years ago, before I was even in the field, I got off work. It was a Friday night. It was a long week. Went home, went to bed. And I was engaged at that time. But I remember as soon as my head hit the pillow, I was in a very deep sleep. And in this nightmare, there was a female featureless shadow figure that was over on top of me. Not in a weird way, but yes, on top of me, nevertheless. And in the dream, I'm trying to fight her off. Boom, like, you know, I'm just, get off of me. And finally, I kept hitting my fiance to my right, and I woke myself up. And to my utter astonishment, the entity was physically, actually on top of me.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
This is why it's so important when we look back in time and say, well, they were just dream demons, weren't they? No, they weren't. The dreamscape reality or the virtual reality scenario is something they were using then, and it's something they're using now. And the question that haunted me, no pun intended, was, okay, where did that entity begin and where did it end? Because it was inside my consciousness. And then when I woke up, it was physically on top of me. And so it's the idea that sometimes the phenomenon will not just manifest to us, but it will manifest through us at the same time. And through that symbiosis, we become creators of our own experience, which again is what I refer to, right? The archetype is given, then it steps into it.
Right. So in your studies, and you know, and I know you're looking at really deep into this, what is the most surprising thing that you found out so far?
Oh my goodness. That's probably the best question I've been asked all year. Well, I started getting into case studies of witch era literature, and I realized that there was a learning matrix employed by the phenomenon in that the archetype itself was much larger than just a mask and a cognitive interface and I'm going to manifest as a lover, but that there were actual practitioners that were taken upon abductions. They had a different word for it. but they left their house and they would leave. And in some of these case studies, this was what blew my mind. Some of these case studies, the phenomenon would take, like the wife, let's say, take the wife and then replace her with an apparition. Wow. To where the husband wakes up to get used the restroom and he looks over and his wife is sleeping peacefully.
That makes sense.
But she's not even his wife. She's somewhere else. Mm-hmm. That was a big key to my research. But even more than that, I realized that there were some rules the phenomenon made us believe it follows. And then when even like Father Seth Stride, other demonologists would employ these rules, mm-hmm. okay, get back in line, and the phenomenon would actually wear the mask of the demonic. But the consciousness, the proto-intelligence behind it, mm-hmm. disobeyed all of those known laws. And so in a one fleeting moment, it was as if we witnessed, oh, okay, that too could possibly be a masquerade, and that there's something even more malevolent behind it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Just kind of directing us in this area. Meanwhile, it's doing something completely different.
Absolutely. Do you think, you know, with the studies that you're doing, the study that Barry's doing, you know, and these other studies, do you think that there's going to be a big revolution with ghost hunting to where people are going to start looking at things that, you know, the way you're talking about? Because I know, like I said, after reading the book, it's changed my mind about the way, you know, I look at these ghost hauntings.
Yes. If it's going to come out, it's not going to come out through television. I should say that. You know, and it's not going to come out through individuals who only research the areas of compartmentalization. This is what I realized. Okay, I'm studying demonology, but even within the case studies of demonology, there was like a subset of intelligences where I'm looking at this thinking, okay, this is demonic, and then bam, I would be gobsmacked, my friend. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I just thought this was horns and hooves. And whatever this is now, it's completely different. And I found myself, not literally in the skull experiment, obviously, right? But there, as if I'm with them, I'm thinking I'm contacting Dear and Edna, and there's another intelligence present. And so even like the concept of disclosure, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, especially if I'm new on your show, if our model of the phenomenon is incorrect,
right,
then our timeline may be just as incorrect, mm-hmm. right? If our timeline's wrong and say, okay, it's not a modern phenomenon, and it's possible that disclosure already happened, mm-hmm. we just didn't realize when. Right. And so that's why we have to go back in history. It's okay, where are our ancestors finding this intelligence? They were finding them there in portals. Where were these portals, right? Where, and again, it's so essentially what I've been doing is kind of stalking a serial killer as it stalks us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that brought me to think, what you just said brought me to think about, because I've also heard, you know, reports from people that claim that they have, that there's alien DNA in their bodies too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm more interested in the hybridization program that we would know as possession. Because there are some possessions that have led to scarifications in the skin, underneath the eyes, and not just possessions, but Sinistrari of Amino. This is going to prove a lot of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, Father Sinistrari of Amino was researching incubi accounts, and he was showing up in homes, in rooms, within an hour of the phenomenon being there. He was collecting excretions from the dresses and the clothing of the victims. Fast forward to the UFO abduction phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Betty Hill. What happened? There were biologics on her dress. Mm-hmm. So it appears that throughout history, especially in antiquity, that as early and as primordial as we may have been, there was something else out there, mm-hmm. that was appearing just as primordial, And yet there it was almost like it's not just an intelligence, but it was almost as if technology was there. Mm-hmm. And yet it kind of masqueraded as, well, you know, it's just an entity.
Well, you know, you mentioned Betty Hill and, you know, that whole thing with the pregnancy test, too, that she experienced. And who knows if she was being abducted or taken long before this.
Right.
You know, this just happened to be the one that she ended up remembering because her husband was there. Because why would they give her a pregnancy test if, you know, there wasn't something going on there?
Oh, of course. And there have been drastic health conditions and diseases originating from these experiences. You know, I worked with a lady a long time ago now, maybe about 6 years ago. She was a manager at a car dealership. And she first emailed me of her experience. She's like, look, Nathaniel, you're not going to believe this, but I'm going to tell my story. So we got on the phone and she's like, she goes, they had been taking me since I was a young girl, like monitoring her fertility. Mm-hmm. And she said that she was having gynecological issues from her encounters. She went and got a hysterectomy. And then one night she says she wakes up to the beings taking rods and looking at her body. And when they realize that she no longer could procreate or create, that's when they abused her. And so this self-replication, now people hear that. They think I'm just talking about the hybridization program. Mm-hmm. Within the concept of a multitude of species. No, the idea of self-replication is where the entity, it doesn't just impregnate the woman with the baby, it impregnates the woman with its own consciousness, mm-hmm. where it's self-replicating through her. This is why it bugs me right now within the field, because a lot of people romanticize that kind of assault and think, okay, it's all love and light, we're good to go, not realizing that the idea throughout history, even like, again, the Baghdad texts, was that the woman was pregnant by the entity she met in a dream and pregnant with it, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. changes the entire historical context of the hybridization program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's why you get the reports of these women that find themselves pregnant, and then all of a sudden they're not pregnant anymore because they're being taken, and the babies are being taken away.
Oh, yeah. Biological avatars.
Yeah.
In demonology, this is what bugs me, too. In ufology, they're not demons. It's okay. Even if we're going to get beyond both masks, we at least mm-hmm. have to know what the demonology teaches. Mm-hmm. And in demonology, we didn't have the word avatar. We had two words, or one phrase, really, social skin. Mm-hmm. That's how it was postulated by people like James Frazier, Henry Frankfurt, and other anthropologists. And so the concept was that the avatar was the permanent embodiment of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Wow. And essentially, this is getting down into James Frazier, his book, and then another one, not the Golden Bow. Anyways, this individual, Fritz Kramer, he goes to Haiti, mm-hmm. and this guide of his, he goes, all right, Fritz, I want to show you who our priest is and what our religious tradition is all about. He goes, okay. So he goes in the middle of the night, they go to this undisclosed location underneath the stars, and they have an altar built, and they're running around, they're singing, they're chanting, and there is this one priest standing by the fire, and his skin is almost white. And he becomes possessed by the ancestor. And then as he's possessed, he takes a rock and begins to cut his flesh. Fritz Kramer flips out. Like, what's going on here? And he says, well, because the ancestor is now possessing the priest, the ancestor is making the priest in his image.
Makes sense. Wow.
Right?
Makes a lot of sense. Right.
Yeah, now we get into, okay, what images are these avatars in? Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm interested in.
Now, let's see if we can touch on this one. Going back through history, let's talk about the Greek gods, the Greek and Roman gods. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, there's a lot of that going on, you know, as far as the impregnation thing. You know, a lot of those stories do have the fact that women were, I'm going to use the word, you know, raped by these gods.
They were taken, right? Taken.
Taken, we'll just do that. But they were taken by these gods. So you think that that's what was going on with that as well?
Yes, yes. And I have created a field that's centered around this exact research. It's called necronetics. Mm-hmm. Because within the Gnostic Gospels, even in Greek mythology, the idea was that there was a connection between the Son bearing the image of the Father. Mm-hmm. And yet, and we see this even in the Bible, right? When you've seen me, you've seen my right. Father. Weird. I mean, I grew up hearing that. I never understood it. Mm-hmm. But so in one of the ancient texts, it talks about how that it wasn't just that the Father was in the body of the Son, but that the Son bore the material image of the consciousness of the Father. And so when you saw it, you were looking at the consciousness within it. If this was just material. And so then we get into the actual concept of possession throughout history and how that there were in fact transient possessions, but then a man came along named Father Sinistra, not Father Sinistra, but Father Malachi Martin, mind you.
Right.
And he came out and said, well, he goes, I've met people who have been perfectly possessed. Mm-hmm. And so that is what it would take for the consciousness of one to commandeer the body of another in perfect secretism. Mm-hmm. It would be called perfect possession. And so that's when I realized, okay, I got to take a step back. And if I no longer think of this phenomenon through purely theological terms, mm-hmm. and look at it as a self-replication, then do all these connections begin to take place.
Mm-hmm. Now, a question I have, and we're kind of stepping back to when you were a demonologist, why do you think that, okay, when somebody's possessed like that, mm-hmm. why do you think that eventually, well, maybe you hope eventually, you know, after doing your blessings and stuff, why do you think these entities leave? Because if they're so powerful, I mean, they could just go into hiding, you know, within that body and then come back out at a later time.
I don't really know. I can tell you this much, though, that I had an earlier theory in my research where it was almost like some of these beings were relearning how to operate the body. Okay. And if you look at the language preferences of the consciousness, even the memory bank that some of these beings had, it's incredible. Like I remember in the 19th century, there was a case study in Israel where a young man was picking apples in an orchard with his father. And his father said, okay, I'm going to go over here and we'll meet up at noon for lunch. And when he met up with his son's hair was disheveled, his body was bruised, and he was just not the same. And so he became possessed. And when they interrogated the entity, they asked him, who are you and what are you doing inside of this man's body? Mm-hmm. And it was the equivalent of interrogating a serial killer. Very strange. And he said, well, he said, he was a predator, but he assaulted people. Mm-hmm. And he said, the reason I chose this body, even temporarily, is because it was in this orchard underneath that same tree that I committed my first act of violence. And he said, it just so happened that while I was here, this man appears. And so this is why it's so important that researchers are careful when they're going into homes. And I know you already know that, my friend, but for the sake of just repeating myself for those out there, mm-hmm. we have to be extremely careful, because that at any moment, this phenomenon and even just our presence mm-hmm. can trip over a theoretical wire where, bam, something we did not know existed appears.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think that at some point, you know, with these studies that like you're doing and like Barry Fitzgerald and people are doing, you think mm-hmm. at some point that there's going to be some direct knowledge of, you know what I mean, some understanding of this completely, so we as investigators, we will be able to deal with this better?
Well, I think it's there already. I think mm-hmm. that our government knows this, and they, of course, know about the esoteric connection to where our ancestors built altars near portals. That's mm-hmm. what our leading scientists are doing. So they know that, and they know infinitely more than people like me who are, you know, doing open source research. But from what I've heard, just from the people that I've talked to that have signed NDAs, yes, they know this. The problem, though, is that when we start getting into the case studies that are darker, it's not because they're horns and hooves. It's not because they're out there killing people or anything like that, although they have. It's the idea that we are not in charge of our own lives. It's the idea that there is a life form that literally could create its image and project it to where we'll walk by it and think it's a car. We'll look up in the air and we'll think it's a cloud, right, and it's not. That, I believe, is why disclosure, true, undisclosed, has not been given, because that, my friend, would kind of destroy the worldview held by so many precious people.
Do you think that they're here among us?
Yes, but I do, at this point in time, I don't believe in the biological avatar in the sense that, okay, they have a different DNA. I think that what they've been doing is taking the fetuses, changing the, not just the genetic structure, but not in that sense, but the aesthetic image. Now, this was told to Betty Luca during one of her encounters when she asked them, where do you get all these grays from? And they said, well, those are the fetuses. So if they're here, I don't believe in the hybrid as the classic understanding, but I believe they're absolutely looking through the eyes of strangers when we pass through them, walk by them, whether.
So what's the end game? I mean, are they here to take over the world, you know, to take over the world when we blow ourselves up, or what's the end game on all this, do you think?
I don't think they're going to land on the White House lawn and evaporate everyone in sight. I think that the symbiotic relationship between us and them implies that we are a way of self-replicating their species, and that the farming archetype that Dr. Carla Turner hypothesized is accurate. And in order to keep us under control, it has to evolve with us. It has to present a new archetype. And when some people like I and others would get too close to the research, we realize that, hey, listen, this may not at all be what it appears to be. Then we start asking, why is the phenomenon intentionally misleading us?
Right.
And then we get pushed back. We get phone calls. I've gotten emails. Other researchers I know have been threatened personally. And so, but this all points to an elaborate hoax where there are characters that this phenomenon has authored in the game. In any time, it can step into those archetypes, and yet now it's leading us into a new scenario to where it's authoring a new character, and might I say a character that is not easily discernible, not easily vetted, and one that we cannot trust.
Okay. Could this be a case, too, of, you know, maybe their societies aren't healthy anymore? Because they're, we'll look at inbreeding, right? You know, there's so much inbreeding within their societies, they're not healthy anymore. So they have to have us to strengthen all that for them.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And we see this in the Department of Jama, it said they created copies of bodies, copies of the same bodies, to where, and I said this the other day, you can have one consciousness, one proto-intelligence, and it could be present in all of the avatars. To where we kill one and we haven't reached the source. And so, yes, and this is not a new theory. I mean, our ancestors, even in the Levant, they hypothesized that some of these hungry ghosts, ancestors, if you, they suffered from the disability of being without being a being. And so if they could kind of gather their consciousness within one locality, location, then they would operate in this dimension at ease. But if they're everywhere but nowhere at the same time, there was a problem. And so that's how we became the mortal portal. And this is getting, circling back to what I spoke of earlier when one experiencer was told, yes, the soul is a species within. What that would imply is, yes, that there are people out there that are hybrids, not in the sense that, okay, their genetic makeup was tampered with, but in the sense that the soul possessing them is a completely different species than the body itself.
Very interesting, because you look at the show V, the last time V was on, you know, the newer version of V, and that's what they were going after. They were going after people's souls. When they would capture people, they would try and take the soul out because they wanted that. So whoever's doing the research, or who did the research on that show, knew a few things.
Yeah, that's one of Nigel Kerner's hypotheses. But, you know, a lot of this has been, I don't want to say regurgitated, but it's been revisited theories that history has already authored and notated. It's just now we're starting to see through the incarnations and even ask ourselves, forget what we want from it. What is it wanting from us? And is that which it's wanting from us, has that changed? It hasn't. So there is something tethering this phenomenon to certain rituals, certain incantations. And here's the scary part, my friend. We don't know why.
Right.
There is no reason for that.
The other thought I had when you were saying this is that the reason why they probably have to stay so many steps ahead of us, too, is because since they're doing this, turning us into these avatars, we're getting smarter, too. That's why we can see through it.
Here we go. Because there we go.
We are part of them. And that's the mistake they made, is we are part of them. And this is probably something they didn't anticipate, that we would start seeing through them. So now they're making adjustments.
Oh, brilliant point. Brilliant point. Yes. And to your point, I said this in a lecture a while ago, that if the phenomenon is evolving according to our awareness of it, then it's possible we could only know the phenomenon to the extent that we know ourselves. And so where that changes, right? Where the idea is, okay, yes, it's when it manifests to us, yeah, it'll blind us with our own vision. Oh, I'm so-and-so. Boom. We're thinking, oh, my God, no, that's good. No, that's what it's manifesting to first, but it's targeting something else within us. And so that's why it's almost like in order to manifest, we have to invest. And in our investing of our species, we go interdimensional, and we start realizing that there are parts of us that this phenomenon has been hiding in, this is deep, I know, but in order to author these archetypes outside.
Right.
That's going to be probably, once I'm done with necromnetics, I'm going to go into Carl Jung's theories about archetypes. I'm going to tie that into ancient idolatry, and I'm going to blend that right into what we're talking about tonight.
Fantastic. On that note, how can people find you?
I have a YouTube channel, and I have a playlist on my YouTube channel with all of my guest appearances. I had a couple shows. Of course, they're going to be able to watch this tonight. And then I was in a documentary in England. It's called The Dark Side of Ufology. That's can be found on UAMN TV. And then Coast to Coast just published my interview on their YouTube channel as well. So that's where you guys can find me, just to watch some of my material and lectures. But you can also find me on Instagram. And that's me. But I appreciate you having me on. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. I'd love to have you on again to talk about this stuff. This is fascinating to me. Thank you. What's next for you?
I'm off tomorrow, I think. and then I'll be on with Paul St. Clair in the UK. He has a channel called Truth Proof.
Right.
And we'll be doing, I think, an hour or two long show. I think 2 hour long show on Thursday. And then I'm booked all the way through the end of this month and the beginning of next. But then after that, I'm probably going to take some time off. I'm getting burned out.
Busy guy. Well, thank you again for coming on. I so appreciate it. I learned so much.
Thank you for having me on. It's been awesome.
Thank you so much.
I love it.
I'd love to have you back on when you're more available to talk more about this stuff.
Sure. We'll discuss some deeper nuances. Yeah. I'm going to get out of here, my friend. Okay. You have a good week, all right?
You have a great one, too. Bye-bye. Okay. That was fascinating. And let me straighten them. I got to get a new chair, you guys. You know, this is one thing I got to work on. That was fascinating. Tomorrow, Nancy Matz is going to be back with us at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. We did have audio problems with Friday's show. So we're gonna do the last 10, 15 minutes of Friday's show, and she's got you know, additional information that we did not finish up with for Friday's show. So it's essentially the last 15 minutes to the end of what would have been Friday's show. Talking about the new lover possessed by the dead husband. So we're gonna be talking about that tomorrow. That'll be at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Please remember, on Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific, I'm gonna be guest hosting Dr. Linda Salvin's show, and we'll be there. And I have a guest, Karen Conti, is gonna be with me talking about Karen Conti is gonna be with me. You know, she was on last week. We were talking about the clown murder guy. I don't know what's going on. I can't think of the guy's name. Okay. Oh, John Wayne Gacy. I knew I'd think of it. So that's why I need a producer to yell at me and go, "Hey, it's John Wayne Gacy." There's no producer here. So we'll be talking about her time with John Wayne Gacy. So that'll be at 1 o'clock PM, Pacific time on Thursday. So I'll be looking for that link. I'll try and get an advertising thing out so you guys can find it. But in the meantime, tomorrow night, Nancy Matz, and we're going to be continuing from 15 minutes when the audio went really bad all the way to the end of that show that should have been on Friday. Okay? Anyway, thank you guys for coming. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate each and every one of you, everybody on this feed, everybody on the RSS feed. I see Pamela was in the chat room. Lynn, you rock. Marisa, fantastic. Thank you guys for chatting. That helps me with that FYP page. So thank you very much, and I hope to see you guys tomorrow with Medium Nancy Matz, and then we're going to continue that possession show, okay? All right, if you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hated the show, share it with 5 of your enemies. We are equal opportunity here at California Haunts Radio. We're just trying to get the word out of our little old show, and it's working. Keep spreading that word, all right? All right, I'll see you guys tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Have a great evening, everyone.